The Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast features people from the real estate community sharing real stories about their struggles, pains, and even losses during their own real estate journey. We share these real experiences so you can learn from them and build a successful journey of your own. Now, here's your host, Cody Lewis, one of the managing partners at Vindu Capital, located in Charleston, South Carolina.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. I am so excited to have on our guest today. He is the CEO of Hudson Investing, Mr. Kent Ritter. Kent, thanks for joining us today. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Cody. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for making some time. I know you got a lot going on in your world, so we really appreciate you making some time for us today and coming in and talking. Before we jump into what we're going to talk about today, I know you had kind of an interesting background on a bunch of different things that you come from in the investing world and the real estate world, but would you mind if our audience isn't familiar with your journey and story, letting them know where you're from, how you got into real estate, and what kind of real estate you find yourself in these days?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana, and it's where I currently live now. I had a stint up in Chicago for about 12 years, but now landed back home. So the way that I got into real estate was actually through another business. I had a business with a few partners as a management consulting firm, a boutique firm that we started in 2010, and we grew that to about 95 employees and $30 million in annual revenue. And then in 2015, decided that it was time to exit that business because we got a great offer. And that was really what started my real estate career, because I had the capital from exiting that business and I didn't know where to put it. And so, you know, I knew I didn't want to be in the stock market. I knew I didn't want all my eggs in one basket there, but I didn't know what else to do. So I started doing research, started looking at different alternative investments, and talked with some really smart people. And that led me to real estate. I mean, real estate really checked all the boxes for me as far as what I was looking for. And so, you know, fast forward kind of from, let's say 2016 to 19, I was passively investing with different sponsors, really using that as a tool to continue my education. Went through a few mentorship programs, some trainings, all the podcasts and books that I could devour, and just really wanting to ramp my knowledge up, knowing that I wanted to be active in the space at some point in time, but recognizing there was a lot I felt I didn't know. So then in 2019, had my first acquisition as a syndicator. 2020, we did three more, and then, you know, one more in 21, and now we're just rolling through, you know, really we're just rinsing and repeating the strategy.
That's so awesome to hear. I know that's a compelling journey, and I feel like there's some that have done that. Maybe they have been on the passive side. They want to get on the GP side, or even we've seen some folks move over from like single family over to multifamily. Mm-hmm. So love hearing those types of stories. But as we brought you on to talk about, I'm sure not everything has been uber successful for you. As much success as y'all have had through the hard work and dedication you've shown, I would imagine not everything's been super easy. Would you mind telling our audience a little bit about one of those experiences?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a fantastic topic for a podcast, because, you know, you learn the most from your failures and for the things that don't go right. So I think this is a great place to find a lot of good advice, right? Okay. So the one that I'll talk about as I was thinking about this is, you know, just a big lesson learned for me is just starting out with passively investing, you know, at the beginning. You know, I lost money on the second investment I ever made. I lost the whole thing. And the reason that I did was because I didn't properly do my due diligence, right? I didn't properly evaluate the sponsor and the deal. And even as a passive investor, I mean, it's critical that you are taking the time to, first of all, really understand the sponsor. Because in my deal, my example was I went out to a crowdfunding site. It was like 2015, didn't know what I was doing, found a deal on the site. I said, wow, it's a multifamily in Houston. That looks great. I think Houston's a good market. And invested in the deal with really no due diligence. And what happened was the sponsor actually was a bad guy. He went out, he committed fraud. He defaulted on the loan. The bank took it back. And we, as investors, we all lost our money. And that was definitely a punch in the gut early on in the process. But man, was that a learning experience, right? And so what that really taught me was exactly what I was talking about, is you've got to vet the sponsor first. It really starts with the sponsor. And you've got to make sure it's somebody that has integrity, and somebody that's going to do the right thing when nobody's watching. And you know, that can be a difficult thing to figure out. But I think really one, I mean, the baseline, have a conversation with that sponsor before you invest with them. I mean, I didn't even go that far. Right. And so that was my first mistake. I think two, you know, follow that sponsor, see what they're doing on social media, you know, personal and from a business standpoint, right? That's a great window into people's lives, you know, and it's a good way to continue to get to know somebody. And then, you know, ask for references. I mean, you know, I have investors ask for references of me. I think it's expected. And, you know, you want to hear, so if they're giving you a reference, I mean, obviously it's going to be a good experience, right? But I think dig more into like the process, like how do they communicate, you know, have they followed through with their promises, right? Is the deal meeting expectations, things like that, you know, has anything gone wrong in the deal and how did they communicate that? How did they deal with that? Right. I think those type of things are really important when you're picking a sponsor, because, you know, a good sponsor can make a bad deal great and a bad sponsor can kill a good deal. So I think it really starts there. So that's my lesson learned.
Yeah. And as you said, I mean, unfortunately, it was a hard lesson to learn, right? You lost your investment, which is, you know, one of the worst things that can happen in something like this, especially as a passive investor. And while I would imagine that was incredibly hard at the time, it's very valuable now down the road, looking back, to understand, one, as you continue to passively invest, what are the types of things that you do need to look for and how do you need to evaluate those folks? But also now you're on the other side of the fence. When you're talking to investors, what are the things that you want to make sure that they're hearing and that they know about you, and what's the image and brand that you're putting out there for yourself and your organization that does say, hey, I'm a trustworthy person. You know, this is our process, is what we're doing. It's interesting. Yeah. I heard some things in there. How difficult is it, especially maybe if it's like your first or maybe even second or just a new relationship with a sponsor, to ask those tougher questions? Because naturally, those are natural business questions, but they're not always natural to somebody who's not used to dealing with those types of businesses. Can you talk about like how hard it is to bring those to light and ask those kind of really tough questions about, well, have you failed, or what would you do if you failed, or those types of things?
Yeah, I mean, they can be uncomfortable questions, right? Depending on what the answer is. You know, I think it's one of those situations where it's just like, if you're going to do it, you need to do it right. If you half-ass it, you can lose all your money like I did. Right. And so I think even as a passive investor, you've got to be willing to take the time, especially up front, right? Like once you understand a sponsor and build a relationship, then you can transact, you know, on a deal level. I mean, you know the person, so then you're just really vetting the deal. But you got to be willing to do the upfront diligence. Otherwise, I would say don't invest because you're not doing your homework. So I think while it's difficult, it's one of those things where it's just like in life, there's a lot of these times, right, where you just got to be like, okay, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right. And this makes me feel uncomfortable, but I'm going to get out of my comfort zone and I'm going to grow and I'm going to ask those tough questions. And I think you just, if you're not doing that, I think you're doing yourself a disservice.
You mentioned in there too, part of doing your homework, you were talking about the areas they were investing in. How much research would you suggest, or maybe even did you do later on, somebody that's looking to passively invest, how much research are you doing into the actual either property or even the territory that your sponsor is looking to invest in? What is that type of research, or should it look like for passive investors?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. So it goes like this. It goes sponsor, market, sub-market, deal. So, you know, the last thing you look at is the deal. So you vet the sponsor out. Let's say it's somebody that you like. Okay. Well, you know, where are they investing? That has to be part of the decision. Are they in a market that one you think is a good market, right? There's growth. Like there's got to be job growth. Job growth is the number one correlator to rent growth. I mean, they're almost correlated 1-to-1. And so job growth, population growth, you know, you need to be in a market that's fairly sizable. I mean, the more, now I invest in a lot of tertiary markets. So, you know, I'm going to put my foot in the mouth here, but like you should, as a rule of thumb, have the larger the market, I mean, typically the safer, just because there's a larger population base, right? But you can find a hell of a lot of good deals in tertiary markets too. And that's a lot of what I focus on. But yeah, so from a market perspective, I mean, are they in a market that one, is a good market? Two, is it a market that aligns with your goals? Because there are high cash flow markets, right, with higher cap rates, where maybe you might have less appreciation, but you're going to have more upfront cash flow. And then there's high appreciation markets. markets, right? Like coastal markets where you might have a 3% cap rate, but you're seeing a lot of appreciation, right? That can be more volatile, right? More cyclical, it can go up and down. So are you investing for cash flow or are you investing for appreciation, right? And so making sure the market ties with your investment goals. And then I think as you get into submarket, you need to understand kind of adjacency to jobs, adjacency to retail. So is there quality retail in the area? You know, things I look for, you know, grocery stores, Targets, Walmarts, you know, Kroger's in our area, other grocery chains, you know, where's the Starbucks, right? Are we in the path of progress? And then schools, like, because people live places for two reasons. First and foremost, it's job. It's people live by where they work primarily. And so one thing that can extend that is access to a major freeway. So we like to have properties close to major freeways because it just expands the radius where people can have a job, right? And the other is schools. People live in places because they want their kids to go to certain schools. So how's the school district? So those are things just to understand. And then lastly would be crime. So how's the crime in the area, right? I mean, people don't want to live in places where there's high crime, especially property crime, if you're looking into crime statistics. So I think even as a passive investor, you should be understanding those things kind of, you know, as you get into the submarket. And then only then are you saying, okay, well, is this a deal I want to be in, right? What's the age of the property? You know, do I like the upside of the property? Do I believe it, right? But, and we could dig in a heck of a lot more, but maybe that's for another day.
Yeah, well, and I love that the idea that you have to be aligned with the sponsor first, and you talked about that, and making sure that you're doing your due diligence on them as a person and their company first and foremost, because that's the be all end all. If you don't feel comfortable there, don't go past go. Right?
Yeah. Stop it. Yeah. Don't waste your time going any further.
Right. Exactly. Now, if you like particular markets, would you say maybe seek out some sponsors that invest in that market and see if which ones would find there? Like if you're a passive investor and you like, you know, maybe a coastal market, like you said, or maybe even a tertiary market, find some sponsors that are investing in those types of markets and then start to see which ones align with you and your interest from a sponsor standpoint, right?
Definitely. I mean, I think that's another good way to approach it. It's great to figure out your goals first, right? What are your goals? Is your goal cash flow? Is it appreciation? I mean, there can be more, but just two basic ones, right? And then find markets that align with that. And then, yeah, find the sponsors who are working in those markets. I mean, that can be a really good way to go through the process. And then you just go back to the spot, which sponsors do you resonate with, right? And also, I mean, sponsors have different preferences as far as, you know, hold times, deal structure. I mean, we didn't even talk about that, right? But like, just what is their strategy? And also, does their strategy align with your goals? You know, do you want to have a shorter hold time because you're trying to kind of compound your capital, right, and do more deals? Or do you want a longer hold time because you don't want to have to worry about redeploying that capital and you just want to have that residual income coming in, right? So I think different strategies, every sponsor will have different deal structures. Like what are fees you're comfortable paying? What are preferred returns you're seeking? What are splits you're comfortable, you know, paying to the sponsor? What are the returns that you're seeking, right? All of those things vary sponsor to sponsor. And they're all things that you need to just be thoughtful about.
Well, and I would imagine too, if anybody's listening that is looking at passively investing, it sounds like you did a lot of research going into your, you know, passive investing from like the real estate side. Kent's thrown out and rightfully so a lot of industry terms, right? And you hear these types of terms pop up on these podcasts and books and everything. Do your research, understand what your goals are financially, do some research on the industry and understand what these terms mean so that when your sponsor is talking about them, you understand the language that they're using and then can correlate that into how is that going to help you meet your goals? And then from there, look at the different markets, submarkets, and ultimately deals that they're investing in and see if that's going to be something that matches up with ultimately back up at the top, your financial goals. So
exactly right. And if people want a cheat sheet for definitions, I've got one on my website. Go to kentredder.com and there's an investor resource section, definitions. It's got pretty much all the terms that I could think of that we use on a day-to-day basis listed out there. So just an easy resource for folks.
Perfect. We'll definitely drop that as a link in the show notes for everyone to easily access. Kent, I think that's as good enough a place as ever to wrap up. I think you've given us a ton of things to chew on and to think about, especially for those that are looking to passively invest or continuously to passively invest and find new sponsors out there. For those that maybe want to follow up with you, maybe even work with you in the future, Kent, where's the best place folks can reach out or find you at?
Yeah. I mean, the best place is my website, kentritter.com. And you can reach out to me there. You can sign up to be an investor. You can find, you know, there's more resources that you can check out. You can get to know me a little bit better. I think it's a good window into my personality as you start to vet out sponsors. And that's the best place to start. I'd say folks can also listen to my podcast. It's called Ritter on Real Estate. It's really focused on passively investing. The tagline is passively invest like a pro. So if you're thinking about passive investing, it can be a good resource for you.
Perfect. Well, Kent, I can't thank you enough for making some time and coming on and talking to myself and our audience a little bit about everything that you've done in the past and some of the things that helped mold and shape you from failures into the success you are today. So thank you so much, Kent. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Cody. I had a blast.
Yeah, thank you. And then we'll catch everyone next time.
You've been listening to the Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast with Cody Lewis. Be sure to subscribe today on your favorite podcasting platform so you can catch every episode of the Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast.